Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
WMR.fm. It is the 19th of December 2024, the last show of the year, and it feels a lot like SES Chicago around here. We have a panel of well-known SEO experts, people who you've read, you've listened to, you've seen reports from, and all of whom are, well, for want of a better phrase, and because we're at the holiday season, SEO legends in their own right. Sitting in the studio waiting for us to get to the panel is Mark Traphagen from SEO Clarity, Morty Oberstein from Wix Studio, and Jenny Hallas from JHR Marketing, is it?
JLH Marketing.
JLH Marketing. See, I had to screw up some name, and I got so close. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Christine Chackinger from Sites Without Walls, and everyone out there. Happy Christmas, happy Hanukkah, merry holidays, and safe, happy new year. Christine, the core update ended yesterday and started. You remember in November with the November core update? And the first thing we said is, oh, yeah, I bet you there's going to be a like December core update. And then there was.
Yes.
Did it occur to you that there'd be a December core update?
No. Mostly because this is when all their people, engineers and stuff, take vacation. You know, end of the year, they use their couple weeks that they have left, you know, so it's a weird time. They must be trying to fix something because I have four sites that we covered in the last two core updates, not the December, but the November, August, and they were stayed the same. And the one I'm looking for an HGU recovery, nothing happened. So I thought maybe this is HGU related. So I don't know. I don't know what they're doing, but they're obviously trying to do something because it's the holidays and they're going to have this go through Christmas. The first day of Hanukkah is the same day as Christmas. So both holidays, their engineers will be working.
you know what? Hanukkah and Christmas crossing is causing a great deal of chaos in my mixed family. It's wonderful chaos. According to Google's search status dashboard, this update is a December 2024 spam update. So Google's chasing spam.
Yeah, it does. I'm sorry, it does say spam. I did say core update too. I'm sorry. My apologies.
You know what? They've done this. This is Google. They've done this a million times before. They had these like omnibus updates, right?
Yeah, it was announced as a core, but it does say spam in the actual text of the update. So, yeah.
Well, I think this is because like Bobby from communications went on vacation for like the holidays. And you know how it goes about Google, right? Exactly. Okay, so you got a core update rolling out. It's going to take about a week. It's going to end just in time for Hanukkah and just in time for Christmas dinner. So, you know, put the cell phones down. Do not be looking at the new Search Console like app during Christmas dinner. You'll probably won't be happy if you do. Maybe you'll be happy. I mean, yeah, who the heck knows? I don't know.
It's a spam related one. So unless you're doing really spammy stuff, you should be fine.
But I know, but you don't want to have to explain it to your family during Christmas dinner because like, could you imagine like 12 eyes all glazing over at the exact same time?
I cannot. That's why I never talk about work in front of family or friends that are not.
It's always best to talk about religion and politics at Christmas dinner. Don't forget that.
Of course.
Okay, so Google is releasing on the heels of the Willow quantum chip. Google is now releasing its own reasoning AI model, and I say quote unquote because I honestly can't imagine how AI actually reasons. I can see it do a whole bunch of logical stuff, except reasoning is that reasonable?
No. So I, you know, Gavin Klondike, we've had him on several times. He's an AI cybersecurity expert, runs the AI Village at DEF CON, well, partly runs, also a big speaker at things like the RSA conference. And I asked him, like, I know they don't reason, so what are they doing? And he gave me a short, quick explanation of they're basically doing chain of thought, like this on this on this logic. And we're going to have him back in the new year to explain it to everybody in detail so we can all get on the same page about them using the human words, thinking and reasoning for what they're actually doing, which is computer logic. Yeah.
So when we get into the panel, which we're going to get to in a few minutes, we have these like three folks sitting waiting in the green room. So when we get to the panel, we're going to be talking about the Forbes reputation abuse and Forbes' latest reaction to it. But there was a neat angle to this story about how Google looks at websites to decide, you know, what is and isn't spam and how things relate to each other. And it's almost like this like view within view or sight within sight sort of thing. What do you get of that?
Basically, he was saying that if third party content takes advantage of the first party site signals, then it's basically a site within a site, and it's confusion for users. But you can treat these areas as distinct sites within a site and like move them off the domain to like a subdomain to build separate trust and identity. That was his actual quote.
But
I don't
this is
know.
how Google like perceives it. They perceive like the greater site than this sort of like site within the site that doesn't match up with what it's the bigger thing's supposed to be, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're a smaller site and you're worried about them taking the whole site down, you might do that, but they're not going to rank the stuff that they already
Oh
took
no, of
out.
course. That Google's
Yeah,
targeting it, in fact.
exactly. So if you move it to a subdomain, it's not going to rank. It just would separate your regular site from being affected by the site within the site. But then the other thing is Forbes is ranking just fine. So the big brands are not being affected. I have not seen, and our panelists may tell us different when we can bring them in. I've not seen a site be affected wholly that has done this third-party abuse. Plus, those are all manual actions, and this one is talking about algorithmic, which has never been rolled out, even though they supposedly have one. It has not been used yet.
So, and we're definitely throwing this one to the panel. The Mark Williams Cook discoveries, finding over 2,000 different properties Google uses to clarify, like, you know, queries and websites, and, you know, a whole bunch of insight into how Google actually does stuff. But this, of course, being a Google hack or exploit, it's, you know, questionable what we're actually looking at. And is this like Google proper or some side of Google's relationship with entities and content as it relates to, say, Gmail or the old ORCID system in Brazil from like 20 years ago?
Good.
Christine?
Yeah, I was going to say, I do know from somebody I talked to, I won't say their name because I don't know if it's public that they know this. The exploit was discovered as an endpoint on an API that was not protected. It was in plain text view. And so they were able to watch the search results with scoring next to them in the code. So as it was being delivered, but it looks more like a debugging than it does actual evaluation code. So it's like debugging what's there as opposed to like for a debugger at Google to see if the search results are working properly. Also, a big thing that came out of there was consensus scoring. Google's had documentation on this since at least 2018, which is when I started talking about it. Consensus is used in featured snippets to help reduce the amount of errors and false data that gets into them. Consensus is not used in regular search results. So even if it was there for debugging, it's not there for rating your site. So if your site is like, we just got the biggest new breakthrough in how XYZ happens, which would not be in consensus with everything or anything, it would not be deranked based on that. If this is basically solely on featured snippets, and Google's documentation states that directly. So some of the other things that they saw were like quality scores, which you already knew existed, but it is kind of nice that they have the actual breakdown of the quality score. Like if you're 0.4 to on a 0 to 1 scale, if you're at 0.4 or below, you're ineligible for search features like snippets, people also ask, discover, news. Well, when you have a algorithmic devaluation through an update like it's running now, you can't get into any of those things. You're completely removed from all those things. But now we know there's actually a scoring that occurs and what that scoring is. And then click probability. Now, the DOJ docs show that Google only uses click-through. Sorry, I cannot speak today. Click-through is on a 13-month collected aggregate data to pull results into the final sort order. They're not ranking the pages. But this is about click probability. So Google has an idea of if someone's going to click on something or not going to click on something, and they give it a score. And then the other major thing out of here was that they have something about short facts, but again, I think that just goes with categorization. So I do believe this is real. One quick thing I learned from a friend who works at cybersecurity at Google is if they pay for it and it still exists, that is not the thing that they paid for, and it's not something they considered an issue. So in this case, they paid him a bounty. This should
Oh,
be fixed.
if somebody reports to them and they actually pay out for the report and then nuke it online, it was probably real.
Yeah, because what he said is we do not ever pay until it's closed. Because you're not going to let the world know that there's like a vulnerability, right? And as soon as you pay somebody, that goes in a record and the record is public. So you could find out that someone paid for this vulnerability and then go exploit it. So this should not be exploitable anymore. If someone does find it's exploitable, let us know.
But in the future, if somebody says, I know this about Google, I've seen these documents, I've proven it here. One of the ways, and I've reported it to Google because I'm a good netizen. One of the ways that a good cyber sleuth can confirm this is real or not is to actually see if Google's paid for it.
Pretty much, because if they paid for it and it's still open, then there's something wrong. Now,
Well,
maybe Google
cheers.
didn't close it, but generally speaking, he said we should always close it before we pay. That's our rule.
So
So,
this is a potential way to basically shut down a bunch of SEO BS that is, bound to come out as search changes and evolves over time.
so I do think
Brilliant.
Mark did legitimately find this API endpoint. I do believe he did see this data. He does have pictures of the code. I just believe it's a debugging situation, as some other people have theorized, opposed to like something so insightful, because otherwise he shouldn't be able to speak about it because there'd be a big old NDA and he's done talks on it. So, but we'll see. But I do think it's more about a debugging feature, as others have indicated.
Okay, we've got a panel sitting in the green room, and
Yes,
everyone's
this
in the
is
green room anymore because
waiting.
it's just waiting to have their mics unmuted. So, Mark Traphagen is, well, you know what? I don't care about his official position. I think he's the chief scientist over at SEO Clarity.
No. Oh,
No, okay. The
no. We have people who
chief
actually
looker
we're gonna be in
interviewer of stuff.
trouble.
How's that?
Yeah,
We better let you
I
guys introduce yourselves.
Yeah, I'm the maybe the chief snoop at SEO Clarity. Curiosity driven. What's going on out there? What's how it's affecting our clients? How we can adapt to that and help them with our enterprise search tool. So yeah, that's officially on paper. I'm in charge of product marketing, which is really just kind of a part-time thing of helping us guide how we present the product to the public, and training is my big thing, and that's part of what I'm doing here, keeping our clients, as well as the helping to keep the industry on top of what's happening out there, what the trends are, and who's doing what. Great to be here.
Okay. Morty, over the last year or so, you've become like the chief communicator and almost the face behind the faces of Wix and Wix Studio, as Wix has been on a massive promotion and platform improvement campaign. First time you've been on the show. Welcome here. Thanks very
Oh,
much for
and
having me.
sorry, Marty, I didn't want to interrupt, but we do need to say right now that Wix Studio is a sponsor of the show, so you don't get any of us in trouble.
Thank you for being responsible.
Go ahead, Marty.
Morty's answers to everything will be the ones that considered correct then, because he's
Do you want to know my literal involvement in that? They showed me a list of like, hey, these are like some digital marketing SEO podcasts. Do you know any of them? Like, oh yeah, Webcology, cool. Yeah, you should do that. That was
Yeah.
literally.
We didn't
And that's
even
how it
know until
happened. That's
after
how
it
the magic
happened.
happens, folks.
And like very little to do with
Exactly.
it.
Insider
Exactly.
trading in the SEO
Yeah,
industry. There we
exactly.
go.
Go
Okay. And
ahead,
Jenny,
Morty. Oh, we didn't let
Jenny
Marty
Howes.
in.
Oh, sorry,
Then
Christine.
before you go on, Morty didn't introduce himself. I interrupted because I wanted to make sure we met our FTC
Oh yeah, sorry.
UC
So yeah,
commitments. Go ahead,
I'm the head of
Morty.
SEO brand at Wix. I've been at Wix for a while. It's my second stint. I've been consulting with them the whole way through. It's almost like 4 or 5 years already, which feels like a long time I can remember. So yeah, a lot of the positioning around how Wix presents itself around SEO and digital marketing and internal education. And I also run Unify Brand Marketing, which is my brand strategy consultancy. And that's basically me in a nutshell.
Okay. Jenny Hallas is the founder, CTO, CEO, and chief bottle washer at JLH Marketing.
You make it sound so exciting. It's my own consultancy. I've had it for a long time. At the moment, I am the former head of SEO for LL Flooring. LL Flooring, of course, went bankrupt a couple of months ago. So I am looking for my next great thing. And at the moment, I am also working on, and I'm just going to say this, concepts of a plan. to write a book. I'm collaborating with a former colleague of mine to write a book on SEO and content marketing and how it's best used with AI.
Awesome. Well,
That'll be most
we're glad
interesting.
you're on a break so we could have you here. Otherwise, I know you're always way too busy. So it's nice to have you.
I'm excited to join. It's been a while since I've been on
Yeah.
Webcology. I'm glad I didn't get myself banned and not invited back.
Oh, never, never. It can never
I don't know
happen.
anybody who's actually done that. Like, what could you possibly do to get banned on this
That
show?
doesn't happen in our industry, Jenny. What are you talking about?
No, that doesn't happen.
Okay. Well, speaking of getting banned and not being invited back, Forbes.
What a
This is
nice
a good segue
segue.
into our Forbes
He's good at
story.
the segues. That's why I love
The
him
art of this
so
segue is an unappreciated art.
much. Jim Hedger is the master of
He
the
is. He's a master of
I
the
wish when those things came out, those look so cool, but they look like so geeky and dumb at the same time. But I wish. Soup it up, get it going like a good 30, 40 miles an hour. Okay,
As
so
Jim
Forbes is
segues
cutting.
into a segue and then segues out.
There you
Yeah,
go.
a segue
Segue sage left.
That and that's how you podcast. Okay.
Exactly.
Happy. Okay, Forbes, God. Gosh darn Forbes. They're cutting ties with their freelance writers. They're citing Google's fan policy, and the explanation is that Google changed the rules. Panel discuss. What the heck? I mean, like, Forbes got away with this for so long, like, forever.
I loved how the
Yeah.
explanation was parasite SEO, as though that hasn't existed for the last 15 years.
Also, the Forbes people had a different SEO for every section. I'd see the ads all the time, right? So it's like, we need an SEO for cannabis. We need an SEO for CBD. We need an S So they had an SEO, different SEO for each thing. Now, according to the article in Verge, not Verb. The big product reviews, they were paying like to do them right, like they were vetting them, the Forbes vetted section, so that writer can't understand why they were laid off. But it does seem like to me that Forbes is kind of looking in the wrong direction. Like the whole policy was the problem, not their freelance writers per se. What do you guys think?
I have so many like thoughts about this because yeah, they got away with it for so long. I don't know like where to start with this. One is I feel like Google's com. You said Google's com strategy or comms person went on vacation. I feel like they never had one. I don't know like what vacation.
I didn't know they had one.
Yeah, their com strategy is like let's throw Danny Sullivan under the bus on a consistent basis and throw him out there on Twitter. They're basically communicating to an entire industry or an entire vertical through algorithms. Which is insane because people are going to see what's happening with Forbes and as well as like it should like I'm not like and I must say I'm not upset like it sucks people lost their jobs and it's not unhealthy for the webs that Forbes is not writing about whatever like you know like the you know digital marketing tactics five ways to build links of the world kind of thing but it is a bad way to communicate to the web about what you're trying to do because now people are going to see this article and they're going to think, oh, wait, what should I be doing with my freelancers? Yada, yada, yada. And they're just making implications based upon this article, which is an implication based on what happened in the algorithm, but Google's not really saying anything. And I think that sucks.
Well, this makes me think of like the I'm gonna go way back here. Like when my blog guest was targeted by Google for having guest posts.
That was the
Have I
old
got the
Smarty
right? Have I
vehicle.
got the right? It was
Talking
Ann
about,
Smarty's site.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's right.
but she was told by Matt directly. Like she knew, because I was with her when it happened. We were going on stage. I have to give her so much credit. She went through a presentation and panel like nothing had happened.
Remember
But
that.
I
when we got
remember
done,
that too.
I asked her how upset she was. She goes, "Well, you know, I am, but I knew. Like he told me. I thought I had made enough changes, but apparently I didn't." So, but to what Marty's saying, not to take
But yeah,
interrupt you. Yeah, go
that's
ahead.
the parallel I'm
Yeah, go
trying to
ahead.
come
Go
up
ahead.
with here. It's
Yeah, go
like
ahead.
this idea that because that site got hit and because that site was doing things the way that they were doing, that all guest posting is bad.
Yeah.
just like now we've got this like all freelance contributing is bad thing happening on the other side of the coin. It's this knee-jerk reaction that the industry does. And I feel like that Verge article didn't do anybody any favors.
Yeah.
It
takes me back to the thing I most of us probably remember. I think it was a couple of months ago now where Google kind of quietly invited a lot of independent content creators to come in and talk with them, talk with their engineers, talk with the whole search thing like that. And you remember you probably saw some of the takeaways from that. Many people came away from that very discouraged because they felt like Googlers were being honest with them. But what the honesty was that we don't know what's going on. Like it was kind of a tacit admission that we've lost control of this thing. And not entirely, of course, but that, it's become increasingly more and more complicated and less precise to tweak the algorithms, which may be why we're seeing so many updates one after the other. But that's pretty much what they said. We have a sympathetic ear. We hear you. We know it's bad. We know some of you got hit unfairly, but there's not much we can do about it because we don't really know how to fix it. Now that was admittedly an exaggeration of what they didn't literally say that, but that was the impression that many of those creators came away with.
And those are the ones that went to the summit.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about, right? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So I took a lot of data on like 50 sites, and then I also was working with somebody to try to help them pro bono. And I was saying since last year that it was broken, and they couldn't fix it, and they finally didn't get around to telling them that kind of in the summit in what was it, August this year. So they sat there dead in the water, and the answer I can't get, and maybe you guys have a thought on this. Just to sidetrack for just a minute, is since Google, it's Google's fault this time. I've never had an algorithm you can't recover somebody from, never in the history of Google. And if it's broken, you can't fix it. So why not tell them one, what they can do? And can they take their content, move it to a new site domain and redirect their links to the new domain without penalty? Because there is in the Google documentation, if you do that normally and they find you, they can devalue your site again. And they used to do that with Panda and Penguin. But in this case, these people are dead in the water with no idea what they can do. And most of them have been around 10, 15 years, and they don't have any answer. They don't have an out, except start over, which is not feasable for a single solo publisher.
Is there hope for those people who were just trashed in the HCO?
I have asked all of them on every platform they're supposedly on, our representatives. I love them to death. They may not be able to say anything, but nobody has answered that question. And I think that it's a shame that Google has put these people in this position and finally admitted, yes, it's probably our problem, but they don't give him an out. They don't give him a way.
My feeling on the matter is try. It can't hurt to try.
Well, there's time and money.
Yeah, but you're not making any money and you're spending time waiting for Google to let you out of this purgatory.
Yeah, because they did say they can't fix it right now and it's not their content. They told them it's not their content at the summit. Yeah.
Mark, just a second ago. Oh, Morty. Jump in. I got a big question for Mark in a second.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. I can't find it when Barry covered the summit. There was something that Danny said that made me almost like a conspiracy theory that they know what the algorithm's doing. They know that it's hurting these smaller websites. And not only say they don't care, but the algorithm is doing what they want it to do. And they have another priority. And that priority conflicts with these creators. And they're like, well, nothing to do about it, which goes back to the comment strategy. Why would you invite them there just to tell them that? Like, that's insane, but okay.
Mark, a second ago in your comments, you almost likened the helpful content update to Google chasing after a lot of the spam at Forbes and then some of the other sites. And that's also because that got drawn into the guest blogging and guest writing idea. Is there a connection between all of those concepts? Does Google think a lot of guest posting is spam? Basically the question.
Oh wow, I think that's too blanket a statement. I'll go back to what Jenny said a moment ago. You know, that's the kind of conclusion that people in the industry, or especially smaller operators that don't they call things much, are going to jump to and do jump to when they see this kind of thing. I've heard Googlers make more nuanced statements on it. I know in the past they have said things that sound like that, but in the past, I can remember John Mueller saying things along the line of, as long as it's in line with the site and it's good quality content, that's our main concerns, those kind of things. But when you see mass actions like this, when you see whole sites going down or whole sections of sites going down, it makes people think otherwise.
Well, as Morty just noted, those sites are likely collateral damage for a longer term agenda Google has. And the CEO of Google was on CNN last week talking about extraordinary changes that are coming in search. Given what signals have been sent, what we've seen at both Bing and at Google in 2024, where are we going in 2025?
Oh, I thought we were going to end on that, Jim.
Yeah.
Well, we can
It's
still
only
end
been
on
two
that, but we
hours.
can.
No,
We can.
trust
We
me,
can
this
still
goes
end
to a
on that.
bunch of
That's our
different
show,
bunch
folks.
of different
Thank you very much.
places.
I mean, I personally would love to answer that question,
Yeah, go
and
ahead. I'm just
that
saying.
is that. I think that I think that where Google is going, and with the things that they have announced, we as SEOs collectively are just focused on the wrong thing. Focusing on the content, the text adjacent elements of a website is, I think, missing the forest for the trees. We are not paying attention to the fact that Google is looking at entities as a whole, and looking at how they can present these entities through voice, through visual, through all of these other methods that are just way beyond what we're doing in the search results today. And that's why I think that some of the work that's being done in the Gen AI space is so important, not from the standpoint of we're all going to be taken over by machines, but from the standpoint of everything that we're doing as SEOs is, in my opinion, is focusing on the wrong thing.
Mark,
I
Morty?
was, yeah.
Yeah, that's an incredible statement. I mean, you mentioned, Jenny, I want to push back just a little, not push back, but ask and get clarification. You said concentrating content. When you mean that, I think what maybe you're meaning, and tell me if I'm wrong, is the concentration on producing like one piece at a time type of content, like, well, we got this keyword, we got this one thing, we should have a page about that, we should have a content about that. That just thinking in that kind of narrow terms as far as content was, you should be building more around a broader base of thinking like what is our topical universe? What are all the entities that connect to us? Is that where you're going with that?
Yes and no.
Good. I want to hear
So
the
honestly, I think if you're still focusing on like one keyword, one piece of content, you are about 5 years behind.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah.
If you
At
actually
least.
want to get into the future, you're thinking more the way that Mark was talking in terms of where do I fit in this entity space. But even beyond that, I think that the search engine's goal is, and I'm going to borrow a phrase from Bing from way back, that Google's goal is this like answer engine, that they're going to be doing this predictive search that's going to tell you what you need before you even know that you need it. And that is where I think that as marketers, not necessarily SEOs, but as marketers, we need to be focused.
Yeah. I think one quick thing, and I want to give Morty a chance. I'm sorry, I know we're kind of, but I just quick, I want to hearken back to the one of your news items, which was about the Google breakthroughs, claiming these major breakthroughs in quantum computing. I was listening to some science shows about that recently, and I don't think we really understand the significance of that because we've heard the term quantum computing for a while, and we think, well, that's here now. In a sense, it is. But what I did not know about this was that quantum computing, for the most part, is very, very error prone because of all the randomness in there. Like it has a, while it can do tons more than traditional computing, it's also way, way more error prone. So allegedly this breakthrough that Google's made will take care of that, will give the capacity that the error correction can be up to the level of where it's truly useful. And the reason I bring that back up is because if and when that goes into play, everything changes with AI. The next step up. All the things we complain about, I'm not saying AI will get perfect and be wonderful and good. I'm making a value judgment on it. I'm saying its abilities we haven't even seen the beginning of yet. And the fact of this Google announcement makes me think that's coming sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think the
yeah, and then
yeah, go ahead, Marty.
No,
go
no,
ahead.
Sorry, Christine. No,
you're the guest. I was just gonna
no, it's your show.
Too long. Go ahead. No, I insist.
It's gonna harken back to what it's kind of in line with what Mark is saying. If the AI does get better and people are using it more, and to what Jenny is saying, like. Jenny, I wonder what your thought is on this. Like, the way I kind of think about it is Google's like a moth. And like a moth, Google's attract whoever has the biggest digital light. So it's not just, you know, are you optimized for this keyword or this end? It's what's your digital presence and what does your digital footprint look like? And that's what the LLMs are basically doing. Like, it's no surprise if you ask, like, what's the best place to get wings at? It's telling you Wingstop and Buffalo Wild Wings. Like, they just have the largest digital presence across the board.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Yeah. Was there a question?
No, I was just trying to tie it back into what you were saying before. Do you like my analogy is the question, the digital moth thing?
Well, really, well, was it an analogy or was it a simile?
Yeah. I guess it's,
I think maybe, the,
maybe it's
the
a metaphor.
Yeah, maybe the tie-in is that your presence beyond your website is going to become even more important, right? All of a sudden, for years we kind of laughed at and you know, ignored all those third-party review sites, third-party, you know, best, but that's where it's getting its answer. If I ask for the best backpack for this kind of situation, the answer I get from an AI search engine is based largely out of those aggregated materials. When I ask what are the best pizza places in Durham, North Carolina, what I get back in ChatGPT or Perplexity is answers based on those articles, not on local reviews or anything like that. It's on, you know, Travelocity's 10 best pizza places in Durham, North Carolina. That's where it's getting the information. So having your brand show up positively in as many places as possible is going to be even more important than ever for SEO.
I feel that's where SEOs get lost with this. This whole like, you know, like brand and SEO thing, they still get, I feel like maybe it's a little bit of a hot take. I feel like they're still like getting caught up in like optimizations or whatever it is to get your brand and your branded keywords and yada, yada, yada. It's not really about that. If you want to get mentioned in those articles, like you need to build momentum, you need to build engagement, you need to build an actual presence. And it's really tangentially tied into the SEO part. Yeah. But it's like Jenny said, it's more like you're almost thinking, not almost, you are thinking like a marketer at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Christine. You haven't had a chance to talk in a while.
I'm one of the hosts. Go ahead. After you're done, I have a question for Marty. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, I the fact that Mark brought up the 10 best places to get pizza on like Travelocity or whatever, that to me, that is the crap content that is all over the web that is driving the AIs. Yeah. And to your point, yes, that's absolutely where that answer is coming from. Is that where that answer should be coming from? I would say absolutely not. And see, I think that that is what Google has recognized, is that although the answer is coming from there, that's not where it should be coming from. And so you have to look deeper than just that textual content and all of those stupid 10 best lists and all of the Yelp reviews and all of this kind of thing to get a more holistic response. And that just doesn't happen without some additional input that is in the form of non-web-based information.
Well, that kind of points back to what I was going to ask Morty about. So there's a big thing about brand lately on just the, you know, socials. And I noticed that Mark Cook's endpoint analysis took a little side way into brand. But a lot of people think brand just means you have to be like Macy's or Google, and that's the only way you can get visibility and search. And my view of it is you have to give off signals of being a brand, whether that brand is just like my parent had a store. We had a store in the countryside of Virginia between two towns, and it had a Christmas store, and people came from 3 hours around because they loved our Christmas store. And our brand was the Wishing Well Christmas Shop, right? And so I have my interpretation of brand for Google is they just need to see the signals that you are a brand, not that you are this multi-billion dollar brand. And that gives them the ability to separate spam from not spam and truth from reality, you know, truth and fact and reality versus not. So I'm wondering your thoughts on that and then everybody else, because I know Morty's doing a little specialization in brand now.
Yeah, I kind of feel like brand, like all everyone in the SEO space, oh, big brand, but brand I feel is the equalizer for the smaller folks, right? Because everyone has a brand. The question is, are you controlling that narrative, or are you not controlling that narrative, or not? Because brand to me is the intersection of who you are and how people perceive you. If you're not controlling that, you're not controlling. People are still perceiving you a certain way. And that's just your brand. But I feel like brands can start doing that and start tapping and start connecting with their audience and making those connections possible. That kind of like helps you spread out a little bit and get that footprint so that Google can kind of figure out who you are and that you do have a brand. And that is the equalizer for the smaller brands to do that. Because one is, by the way, the bigger brands have a much harder time. I'll tell you, as someone who works for a bigger brand, it's a much bigger machine. It's much harder to do. It's much harder to be connected to the audience and make those connections and get that brand out there the way that you actually want to. And it's a huge advantage for smaller websites or smaller businesses that I don't know why they're not taking advantage of, because it's much easier for them to understand who they are, who the audience is, and to tap into that connection than it is for a larger brand. It's an advantage, not a disadvantage.
Yeah, I think that you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said the word connections there. We need, it's a thinking now of not just what does my brand stand for, that's fundamental, but what is my brand connected to? And what are these LLMs, when we talk about AI search, going to see my brand connected to? That's where Jenny's point about the entities comes in, you know, that network of node. This is the way we're thinking. We're advising our clients at SEO Clarity. It's the way we're working at SEO Clarity itself. It's what I'm doing, is making sure that our brand more and more is connected in with the signals that tell, whether it's Google, traditional Google, or it's a AI search engine, an LLM going out and looking, that these are the things that associate with SEO Clarity. These are things that associate with the brand, building that web more and more around. It's kind of like the old link. So it's maybe the new link building, you know, is entity building in a way, right?
I would agree with that. Definitely entity building is link building. That's a hot take right there, Mark.
Well, there's truth to that, because like when
you can use that.
when people talk about, they put in an author's name and suddenly they get more traffic, it's not because Google knows the author. It's because the entities related to a well-known author are much larger. There's more of them. They're more searched. They're more frequent. So people now find them in more spaces. They're more visible than they would be if they was just, you know, staff writer was put in that place. So is that kind of how you're thinking of it, where entities connect to entities? And
well, yeah, the kind of entities that connect to you are the clues. They're the evidence, the forensic evidence, if you will, of what your brand is really about. And you know, in the old days, in the original Google algorithm, of course, that was links. Who linked to you was what told them what you were about, right? Now it's bigger than that. Links are still in the mix, but it's much bigger than that. It's the ability to go out and see through these LLMs to detect the way that you're mentioned, the way that you're talked about, what you're connected to, who's mentioning you, all those things become signals that tell it what you should be associated with. And that's what I'm saying, is like, you know, just getting your brand out there, making sure you're making those connections. It's more than just getting mentioned, you know, in those silly top 10 articles and things like that. All the places that it might be looking, in the content that you're surrounding yourself with, everything that points to exactly what your brand is about.
At this point, sorry to cut you off, Jenny, but at this point, I think it's interesting to point out to the audience, we have a panel consisting of somebody who works for an SEO enterprise platform that is also a massive set of tools for large-scale websites. We have somebody who works for an up-and-coming website builder that is also highly focusing on SEO. And we have a hands-on SEO who uses the tools that the two aforementioned persons make and develop. Looking at AI and e-commerce,
And
information
you planned
retrieval,
all that,
and
didn't you, Jim?
it's amazing how the world works out, eh?
I contacted everybody. That's okay.
That's,
Anyway, go
this is
ahead.
Christine. This is Christine's show. She produced all of this.
It's the Webcology Diversity Program in action.
Given just where the three of you are coming from and looking at AI's impact on search, on tools, on search results pages, how is moving to 2025, what you're looking forward to, your optimism, the how this is going to change your workspaces, your tools, and your relationships with either clients or with users for the better?
Well, I'll start by saying, like, we're heavily investing in helping our clients to detect their brand presence in these LLMs, because that is the, I'm going to tie that back to what we were just talking about. It's kind of reverse engineering, just like, SEO in the beginning is trying to reverse engineer Google, right? Now we're reverse engineering what are these stupid LLMs seeing about us? From their output, we can tell, like, what they think we're connected to, what they think the Ryan's connected to, and begin to incorporate that into our content creation tools, our topical research tools, all of these things that are going to help people to show up more in that. So it's a whole different way of thinking. Thankfully, we've been prepared for it. We've been working in the entity and topical space for a long, long time, the AI space. But yeah, that's the big thing, I think, is now, just like for years, we've reverse engineered Google results, testing, trying, looking across billions of results to see how do we think this works? Why is one thing ranking over another? Now we're doing that same for AI search.
Morty and Jenny, what are you thinking about the integration of AI either into your product mix or into your services mixes?
I feel like we haven't heard from Jenny in a while, so I'm going to hand the mic off.
And I know Jenny's going to write a book about this, so come on.
So yeah, I feel like we've got to plug this.
Yeah, this is like chapter three territory.
Yes. So I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to that I think will begin to happen in 2025, but is still not real accessible yet. And that is really rethinking the way that SEOs and content marketers do their jobs, and identifying the real tools and techniques that can be augmented with AI to work much faster and smarter than we have in the past. There's been so much manual work that's gone into SEO and into content optimization for so many years, and that is just not necessary anymore with the AI tools that are with the AI coding that can be available to somebody, but it's still not readily accessible in the form of, like, SEO Clarity, for example, has some great tools within the tool set that help people do certain things, like the content writer builder. What's the name of it, Mark?
Content Fusion. Yeah.
Content Fusion. Content Fusion is a fantastic tool. And I didn't get paid to say that. I just really like the tool.
Don't give Mark any ideas, though.
But there's still a limitation there because it's within a platform that has to be designed for the masses rather than for your specific situation. And so what I'm really looking forward to is the ability for individuals to use those collabs, to use that information to their benefit in a much lower code environment, so that people who don't know how to code, who don't know Python, can really pull some things together and make their work so much more efficient. And I think when we get that efficiency, we'll get the opportunity for people to kind of get their head out of the weeds and think really critically about what message they're sending, what entity they're building, how their reputation is in their industry, and all of these other pieces pieces that I think tend to get lost or tend to get knocked over to the brand or the PR departments and kind of forgotten about by SEOs.
Now I'm really glad that I let you go first, because that's like exactly what we're focused on. Our whole focus is basically like how in-house teams or agencies can, you know, or creators can leverage the AI to, you know, remove redundant processes that they, that A, remove redundant processes they don't have to do anymore, but also make things accessible that maybe weren't accessible before. Like, so we have an AI assistant in our IDE environment that helps you code, right? I'm not a coder, but I can go in there and say, hey, create me a, you know, schema markup for jobs, whatever it is. And it's not just for SEO. It's like any kind of coding that sort of democratizes what you're able to do on your website. Or at the same time, like, I'll give you like another, like, you know, concrete example. I this is a little bit of a hot take. I hate writing meta descriptions. I find them super annoying. So yeah, it's my like SEO pet
peeve. We're all nodding. We're all nodding. Yeah, we can see each other.
Like, title tags are fine. Whatever, it's one sentence. Like, so we have an AI meta tag creator. It'll just create. It'll read the content on the page. You can tell it what keywords you want to focus on, and it'll just spit out a few versions of a meta description. I am happy, more than happy. Just click yes. Go ahead. I read it first to make sure yes. But please, I don't want to have to write those meta descriptions. Go ahead, AI.
Yeah, we're already doing that, and that's, we have a lot of clients using that and using it at massive scale, tens of thousands of pages.
SEO Clarity does it great, yeah. But one thing they still need to do is let it learn for your specific business.
It's coming. It's coming.
Stop telling me my floors are durable. I'm not allowed to say my floors are durable.
You can manually adjust that now, but the automatic part of it is coming.
You just need a little teeny willow chip and you'll be fine. Okay, so that was your optimistic views of like AI and search going into 2025. Where can it all go sideways? What can possibly go wrong?
How much time do you have?
What is already going wrong?
Yeah.
Oh, glue.
It was interesting. Just today, I saw in the news a study, a major study that was released. It was a congressional of two different studies where they did some, you know, pretty intensive work, control work, like that, and found one of them was with the company that produces Claude. I forgot the other one was. Basically, bottom line was saying they are discovering that the AI now has the ability and often uses it to deceive the trainers. Did you see this?
Please don't turn me off.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I saw this.
It's Hal, right? Yeah. It's Hal. Like, I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that.
Open the bay doors, Hal.
Yeah, except it's even more insidious. Like the AI learns, because it has this mission, again, to accomplish certain goals. If the trainers are setting up a situation where it feels like it can't do its overall mission, it will lie to them. It will give them an answer that it thinks like that's what they want, but it's not changing its mind really. And the one was really fascinating, just very quickly, just anecdotally, was really fascinating, because the one experiment, they had a scratch board for the AI, like where it could do its work, like show your work. And they told it, they lied to it. They told it that we're not looking at that. We won't see that. So you can think out loud over there. And it was plotting how to lie in real time to the creators. So there's the scary stuff, right?
Which proves one thing, AI is a child.
Yeah. Well, this is the logical next step to the hallucinations, right? Yeah. AI, mm-hmm. when we first started playing with it, was hallucinating all the time. Now, instead of hallucinating, it's just lying.
Well, you know what? Actually, Morty, I think you really, without meaning to, really touched on something. AI is just a child. We're looking at something in its infancy, and it's growing up awfully quick. One of my techno sages, Rene Gagnon, mentioned that internet age is like seven, is like dog age, is 7 years to one human age, but AI age is like 400 years to a human age, to a human year. So it's growing up, and it's going to grow up awfully quick. Sorry, Christine. I'm having a hard time phrasing the question. It's going to go down to human element. So what's your comment?
We haven't talked about the real process issues, though, about this moving forward, right? So the costs are astronomical. They're reviving Three Mile Island to power it. Microsoft is buying that. Facebook is buying a nuclear reactor. We have companies buying nuclear reactors. I'm not sure how I feel about that to power it. AI cannot train on AI generated content, and they theorize that like 60% or 80% of the web by next year will be AI generated content, because it breaks
So
the
will that make
models.
human generated content a serious premium?
Yes, it does. There's
Yeah.
actually an article about it today. There's a whole research article today about that they need. Sundar is even part of the conversation from Google. If you don't know the CEO of Google, someone listening. So my question is, when you get into real practicalities of this, like, where does it go? Because earlier this year, Goldman Sachs in June wrote an article about to stop investing in large language models because they'll never recoup the $860 billion a year they need to break even. And then that's soon after that, OpenAI is like, well, we're going to do search. And we're going to do this and we're going to do that, right? Because they gave OpenAI a 12-month life expectancy on their burn rate because Microsoft has labeled OpenAI a competitor. And so now they're not giving them the servers they need to do the work, right? They're doing some servers, but not the load. So, because of the massive cost, the massive amount of investment needed to continue with this, does it continue? Or does it at some point, or are the only ones who continue it the big guys like Google and Bing and Facebook because nobody else has the money to just think into something that may or may not become, because it's not going to become AGI. They know that. It doesn't have a future except for what it is.
Just
It is what it is.
keep in mind what I mentioned earlier, though. If this breakthrough that Google is claiming in quantum computing is really occurring and really feasible within the next year or so, that changes everything because the efficiencies go up by margins. The figure that they were saying was that this computer would be able to do in seconds what the best computer we have now would take a septillion years. I forget how many
Yeah,
zeros that is
17.
to accomplish.
We
Yeah,
did it. Yeah,
17.
we did a story. Yeah.
So, the efficiencies go way, way up. And that could be, throughout technological history, we have these times when we reach like these crisis points where things can't go on. And then there's a breakthrough that's a paradigm shift. This could be one. So if it's not, if they're snowing us, if it's like a cold fusion, then yeah, what everything you're saying is right, Christine. It's hitting huge walls.
I would also say I agree with you 100% on if it becomes a practical use model. The issue is our security can't withstand quantum computing at that level. So will governments even allow it to become a thing? Because it can crack everything. There's nothing that's
Yeah.
at that point not crackable.
Right.
That's a
Yeah.
fantastic question. And I think what we're going to see with all of this technology is that it will grow. We will have some technological breakthrough that will be accepted that will allow AI to continue to grow and the use of AI to continue to grow. What I think is more important in the short term is that we get to a situation where all of these disparate AI models come together, because what we have right now is hundreds, thousands of different models out there, all of which do some things well and some things horrible. And right now, if you're trying to do certain things, you have to draw on like, four or five of these different models at minimum just to complete your task, or to complete it well. So I think that AI in itself is going to have to grow up, and to use Morty's analogy or metaphor of a child, it's going to have to grow into a teenager before we're going to be able to really actually use it at scale. So that technology is going to have to come, but so is the capability.
A
I
really
feel
good
like,
point because, oh, go ahead, Marty,
oh,
go ahead.
no, sorry, your show.
That's okay. Hey, no, it's not that. I couldn't tell. Right? There's a delay. Just real quick comment on what Jenny said is that Gemini came out with the new, they gotta let stop. Developers cannot name things anymore. It's like the fast flash experimental, whatever. It's like,
Yeah,
give it a
never
name.
let engineers name stuff. Bad.
No, but you know what? And you know what? It failed. It failed the strawberry test. It can't tell you that there's three R's in strawberry, and only one AI model can, but it doesn't know there's a T in strawberry. And there are reasons for that, because a numerical association with the letter R that it puts together in the pattern RR, they know those two are the same, but the other R is not in that pattern. So then it has a different mathematical number, so it doesn't know it exists. But none of the AI models have, except one, have solved it, and that one didn't know there's a T. To Jenny's point, they really do need to come together, because maybe together they can all solve the strawberry problem, which still with Gemini, the newest one, cannot do. So, and Marty, sorry, go. What were you gonna say there?
Well, you know, kind of to that point, I feel like the problem is, like, not only is the AI a child, but the companies who are using, they were developing this stuff are also children, and they're children who are worried about talking about, like, money. It's like, you know, the pink elephant in the room. They're worried about stock prices, and that's really, like, the real pink elephant in the room, is that a lot of what's happening is not about developing AI or what users want or whatever it is, developing the technology. It's about what's good immediately for the stock price. And that is a horrible, talk about models. That is a horrible model for technological development and overall health of the web.
That's a really good point. A quick question to you on that one too. Oh, now I just forgot it. Oh my gosh. Go ahead, keep talking.
I mean, well, let me ask the panel this. If that is the model, right? We know that's the model. Stockholders control all. But so if we continue down the path of global in inflation and the path of AI being so expensive and probably becoming only accessible to the elite at some point, how does that change the conversation?
Yeah, it's
Depends
really,
if you're part of the conversation or not, because there's a good chance that the vast majority of us won't be part of the conversation at that point.
There's also a question I have to you guys, if you perceive it this way, because I do. This is the most amount of money ever dumped into a technology I've ever seen in the history of my life, where there was no market research, marketing plan, or marketing product. So the big thing in Goldman Sachs assessment was no one developed the product that ever is going to recoup the costs, so don't invest in it anymore, right? Because $20 a month memberships are not going to recoup $860 billion a year to break even. So did you guys notice that too? Like, there didn't seem to be a lot of market understanding.
Yeah, there was I forgot who put it out. There's a big, like, brand study every year. Like, then they list, like, their top brands, and they listed Apple as a top brand, even though Apple lost, I think it was like 3% of their value or their profit or whatever it was. They lost 3% of something doing with money itself. And the reason why they still valued Apple as the most, valuable brand was because they felt that Apple was doing the research and had a plan about how to integrate AI. Not that they're not chasing either. Everyone's chasing. But they have a plan and a development roadmap. Whether that's true or not true, like, that was their perception of Apple, let's say, versus a Google, whose feel they felt was chasing their tail with whatever AI is the next greatest thing that's going to improve the stock price. So there's a huge amount of this chasing that's going on. It's devaluing. I feel like overall, it's devaluing brands. It's devaluing faith in the brands, which is also devaluing the brand, and it's putting a lot of these companies on a path where 5 years from now, they're going to look back at how do we get here in a problematic way. I think it's a real problem.
Are we in a bubble? Is this a bubble, a perception bubble, or an investment bubble? Or is there just too much energy going into something that isn't gonna give back the
Another
warmth?
dot-com boom.
Well, yeah,
That is the
no,
talk
more
on
like dot
LinkedIn right
com
now.
bang.
Yeah. That is the talk on LinkedIn, that it is a bubble for monetarily, but a perception is a good way to phrase it too, though.
I mean, the tulip bubble, the infamous Dutch tulip bubble was driven by entirely by perception.
I don't know the Dutch tulip bubble.
Well, it's a long story. Incredibly stupid. Check it on Wikipedia, who incidentally desperately needs your money. Friends, support Wikipedia. Best links ever. Best information source ever.
What do you
Sorry,
guys
I just had
think?
to
Are we
get
in a
that in.
bubble?
Jimmy Wales, I got
Well,
Jimmy Wales in the back closet there, and he's been banging saying, "Say that, say that, say that."
feel
Are
like
we in
we're
a
in a
bubble?
perception
That's a
bubble.
great question.
It
What do you
feels
guys
like
think?
we are. I mean, like Christine was saying, there's all this money going in and no real foundation beneath it.
You see
So I.
teams, like, you see, like, big marketing company or rest of big marketing teams rather starting to push back. Like, I see the chatter of, like, the more, call, like, I hate these words, professional or, serious corner of the digital web is pushing back a little bit more than they used to. So I feel like that's where you see the perception bubble starting to pop a little bit.
Okay, so here's the hard question. We've seen Google, like, revamp the SERPs. AI overviews are, like, hitting 60, 70% of queries now. They're even
coming
into
whoa,
e-com
whoa.
space.
Not even close to that. Where did you get that
Oh,
figure?
I'm sorry. I thought they were up at like at
Well,
6% now.
More like 4 to 6%.
Thank you for the correction. That's an
Yeah.
important correction.
Oh,
Thank you.
that's and that's, by the way, just that, sorry to interrupt your train of thought, but like that is important to say, like, why
No,
I am on
terribly.
public record. I've been on public record for a long time saying that I think AIOs were entirely investor driven. It was investors screaming at Google, like when ChatGPT came out, like, where's our AI? Where's our AI? And
That makes
Google,
sense.
when, as I predicted, when, you know, SGE, it was like 60%. It was all over the place, right? I said that you're never going to see that. And you didn't, like, because they've just drawn it back to where it's safe, the bare minimum, so they can show the investors, see, we have AI. AI is in our search. But any place where it's going to touch the pocketbook, they're very careful about it.
Well, you know
I'm
what? I
sorry,
think you
Kim.
just
Yeah.
you just yeah, you know what? You just answered my whole dang question there. What's my my
Trust
question was, what's going to happen if the
me.
bottom drops out, if they discover that that the users don't in fact want this or want to go in this direction, or that it's not useful in the long run to them? What happens to the search? What happens to the is it going to be like that whole season of Dallas that got canceled because it was just a big dream? Is that what 2024 is going to be like?
Yeah, I think Google's already doing the end run. Like AIO was up there to satisfy the investors. Hey, we have AI. Okay, shut up. The real play is in reorganizing the search results. I think that's really, using AI to, yeah, I see Morty waving there. Yeah, this thing that came out with recipes now, where it's AI organized results, where if you don't see the traditional blue links, you see the AI is used to take, I need quick dinners for a family of five with young children. And it organizes the recipes into, 10-minute dinners, one pot dinners, dinners for picky eaters, And Google said that is coming to the rest of search eventually. That will be the huge change, and that will maybe be the most interesting and useful use of AI technology, to say, like, it no longer should just be based on, there's one winner at the top, one, two, three gets all the clicks, and then everybody else is that. But how can we help you to dig deeper without digging deeper? And so I put in, like, I need quick dinners for a family of five right now. And the questions you didn't even think to ask are organized for you.
Well, and here's
Well,
what I'm talking about with like the answer engine concept, right? Is the ad that they're running right now, where you take your camera and you take a picture of your fridge and Google and use Google Lens and say, hey, what can I make for dinner tonight? Google uses AI and information in their search database to come back with a list of recipes you can make with the things that it sees in your fridge.
It
I
just
mean,
tells
it's
me
a
to clean up. It just tells me to clean my refrigerator. That's all it tells me.
No, my needs that right now. Yeah, that's why I theorize that they're putting everything into these little boxes. So they have the UGC box, they have the list box, they have like list items now, because they now feature list items, but in its own little box. They have the people also ask box, they have the already trending box, so that they can, it's a process as Tanagram. They can use Tanagram to rearrange based on AI results. I also wonder how that'll break down communication between people. Because I'll say to a friend, like, go search this and it's in, go look at this. It's in the top. So if everybody's
Yeah.
results are individualized, is that a positive or a negative? What do you
Well,
guys
and
think?
then the other question, getting back to the stockholders, is how do you monetize AIO? They're just not doing a good job of monetizing the AI overviews. So how are they going to monetize that? Because they're going to have to. It takes up way too much space in search results.
Well, I don't think it ends up being. I agree with Mark. You know, when they demoed Gemini originally, what I don't know, one of the things that was like, I forgot the actual query the guy was asked. Something like, I want to make like a birthday cake for my kid, and it shows a custom format of results for that query, and then it has a different one or different format for a different query. I feel like that's where the AIO was gonna go, right? Because what it is now is a glorified feature snippet. There's one thing that I feel like, Google said, oh, users really enjoy this, users really want this. And I'll push back on that, because there's one thing about human beings that you will never take away from them, I feel like I'm like in a philosophy class now. Is there a desire to explore something, which is kind of what yes. Mark hinted at. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to get at something quickly, but you want to be able to discover, you want to be able to explore it, you want to be able to interact with it and weave in and weave out of it. And the AIO, as it is now, is the absolute worst at that.
I agree 100%. Yeah. I mean, why do you think we had encyclopedias on our houses, you know, 40 years ago or 30 years ago?
My favorite story about where I think this is going is that you know, a couple months ago, I had an hour and a half drive to go see a friend who had given me a science fiction book. I'm a science fiction nut. It was one of the most bewildering and confusing science fiction books I'd ever read. And he was really into it. And I said, like, I don't understand half of this. And all the way on that hour and a half drive, I had a conversation, voice conversation with ChatGPT, just asking deeper and deeper questions. And ChatGPT was suggesting questions I could ask. And we had this conversation literally where by the time I got there, I knew enough. I knew, okay, well, that was going on. That was what that character was about. That was the motivation for that. To tell me, like, I think that, you know, that kind of interaction is what people are going to, it's the next generation of what people are going to be used to and expect to be able to see.
So AI is your well-learned friend.
If you trust
that
it.
Can only predict what you want to hear.
Yeah, and my problem with anything written by AI is I have to know it well enough to know when it's not telling me something that's accurate. Mm. So then I just skip it. I'm like,
Well, as I understand from something Mark inferred way earlier in the show, AI is about to start learning. You know, it's about to start learning who you are and what you are, and you know, and following up on that. That's what I heard.
Well, it already can to a certain extent.
Sort of, kind of. It's not really.
But the key is that AI is still just predicting an outcome. It's not. Right. It's not reasoning.
No.
To the level that people seem to think that it is. It is. It is still just taking a corpus of information and predicting what the answer should be based on that corpus.
Without knowledge of what it's writing either.
Right. Yeah. Right. You know, when I say I had this conversation, you know, it wasn't that ChatGPT knew more about the book than I did. It's that there's a lot of people out there on the web that knew a lot about it and had written a lot about what this means. It was just helping me by summarizing that, but in a guided, the useful thing, the point I was trying to make is that it wasn't the information so much as it was the guidance, the expansive conversation that it was taking me on. Oh, this should be the next logical question. I want to know more about that. Go deeper on that. You know, that way of exploring the world, exploring knowledge, which you can do on Google, but you know, it's takes a lot more work.
Well, I think that's a great way to use it. I think there are a lot of wrong ways SEOs use it, but I think that's a great way to use it because you're not looking for informational answers. You're just looking for guided thought, logical patterns, which is what it does. So I think that's a really good use of ChatGPT. I think that a lot of people in the industry don't understand. That's why I've been sharing the NVIDIA talk from Black Hat, is it's just predictive text and pattern recognition from what it had before. So it read a lot of the stuff probably about this book you're talking about. And so it was able to give you like these insightful answers, even though it doesn't understand that it's answering.
Yeah, I mean, even answered in the sense of like, is it like many, many commentators say, you know, or sometimes it would say like many commentators say this, but others say this about it would give me differences of opinion. But it's just drawing from, you know, all the writing about this book that was out there.
Yeah, exactly. But when it comes to informational, if somebody says like they read something and I can tell it's written with AI, I just skip it. I'm just like, I don't have the time to figure out what's right or what's wrong. What's that?
I have the same mistrust like that. And that's really the problem, that you don't know where you can and where you can't trust. And if you're dealing with something, a technology that you're still wondering if you can trust it, that's a fundamental problem.
And that's where all those other signals come in from Google. This is where the future of search is headed.
Okay. Speaking of, we can talk. Well, no, we can talk about the future of search forever and ever and ever. We are down to our last moments of the show. The three of you, do you have any like quick, you know, you remember the quick elevator pitch? You had 30 seconds and you got to get, what do you got to do? What are your tips for SEOs moving forward to 2025 in your elevator pitch style?
Do you want to start with Jenny?
Sure. Give me a job, please.
Okay.
Jen's amazing, by the way, if anyone hasn't figured
Yes.
that out yet.
Yes, somebody snatch this person up. You're being stupid out there. You've got one of the best SEOs in the world available.
Exactly, 100%. Totally agree.
Thank you. Yeah. Seriously, just question everything. Don't assume that anything is exactly as somebody else says it is, because it all varies depending on your own needs, the needs of your clients, the needs of your customers.
Morty, what's your 30-second tips for SEOs going into 2025?
I'm not advocating for LSD. I'm also not advocating for LSD, but I would ask LSD. I would ask SEOs to open their minds.
Okay. Mark. That's a very silly Simon answer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same line with Jenny and Morty. You know, open your minds. I think the most discouraging thing to me about the first leak, you know, the first big leak, the Mike King, Rand Fishkin exploit leak, was seeing so many SEOs jump back 10 years, you know, in terms of this individual factor, this one thing is going to make the difference. And that's just not the way it works. Taking a more holistic view, thinking about your brand, thinking about your customers, thinking about your clients. If you're focused on that, you're focused, you know, product process, client focused, building around that and around what satisfies that, building that reputation, as I said, you know, building your entity universe around your brand. I think these are the big things that are coming in the content world. Again, think more topically, think more about relationships between things rather than individual one-offs on things.
So when we started the show, I noted it's we're recording this on the 19th of December. 1 week from today will be the day after Christmas Day, the day after Hanukkah. This feels a lot like SES Chicago. This is our last show of the year. We're taking a 2 week break. Oh. I'm wondering, do any of y'all have Christmas plans? Do you got plans for the holidays?
What?
It's the best feeling. We're all chilling out now. We're done. What are you offering for the holidays?
Being the first night is, you know, my Steelers are playing the Chiefs. It's like greatest Hanukkah gift ever if the Steelers win.
I know.
Okay.
I've got the best of both worlds going on. My family, we always do Christmas on Christmas Eve. I'm going to do that, obviously. But I'm currently, my primary partner I'm dating is Jewish. So starting that day is just the start. It goes on for another 8 days after that. I'm loving it.
That's awesome. Tough. Have fun.
We know how to party.
Yes, you do.
I'm going to be enjoying my last Christmas with both my children living with me because my oldest is headed to college next year.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Wow. I remember the pictures when he was so little. And one thing I wanted to say before we go, Jim, because I know you're about to hit the close, is that I really appreciate you guys coming on today. Each person here, for those listening, I've known at least, well, probably a decade, maybe Morty, maybe a little less. And they're some of the best minds in search in the industry, but they're also some of the best people. So thank you for being on here today. Really appreciate you. And now let's
thanks so much, Christine.
Yes,
you're welcome.
Loved being here.
I was going to say a variation on that, but I think Christine actually, you know, Christine said it best. So I do want to thank you all for being here. It's a wonderful gift of your time. So thank you. Friends, it's been Webcology, recorded live to podcast on the 19th of December, 2024. In the studio, we've had Jenny Hallas from JLH Marketing. Yes, maybe. Yeah, woohoo. Marty Orbison from Wick Studio, and Mark Traphagen from SEO Clarity. On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media saying Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays. Biggest love, be safe, be smart, rank well, be kind to each other, and we'll talk to you next year.
Hi, everybody. I'm waiting.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.